Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal in for Jim Engster this morning. And with me in the studio is Robert Travis Scott, president of the Public Affairs Research Council, Louisiana's premier good government and government watchdog group. Been around for many, many decades and done many, many good things, produced a lot of great policy. And most recently, Louisiana Constitutional Reform. This report that y'all produced at PAR, Robert, was a year in the making, and y'all just released part one, Getting the Foundation Right, a couple of weeks ago. Welcome to Talk Louisiana. Thanks for being here this morning.
Oh, it's so great to be here. And, you know, it's election season, and although it's not the most vibrant, you know, election season we've ever seen, still, I mean, there's a lot of new candidates out there. There's a lot of energy talking about new policy. Whenever we talk about, you know, where the state needs to go, there's a lot of people who are new to the environment who want to serve up here for election, and they're really trying to focus on what the right thing is to do. So we're kind of enthused about the election and what will come out of it. We don't have any favorites in the election. We're just a nonpartisan group that doesn't take part in trying to back one candidate over another or one party over another. But, you know, we're really into the policy. Mm-hmm. We want them to talk about these very important issues that will move the state forward.
Well, and it's a very noble goal. And of course, it's the right way to do things, to talk about policy. Unfortunately, it seems like in politics today, there's less discussion about policy than ever before, and a lot more just throwing barbs and latching onto conspiracy theories and toting far extremist positions on one side or the other. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, let's talk about the Louisiana Constitution, because we've been talking about constitutional reform and constitutional conventions for a long time. Since 1973 was the last time we tackled the state constitution, I believe. And since then, it has doubled in size from 36,000-something words to more than 72,000. We've added 195 amendments in those years. And I think you at PAR thought, with this upcoming election season and the turnover and the number of vacancies that we'll have in the legislature coming, being filled by fresh faces, this was the opportunity to really talk about this and the need for some of the reform and changes.
It is, and a lot of people are interested in it because you get into the legislature, the policymaking field, and you run smack into the state constitution. We have the distinction of having the fourth longest state constitution,
fourth largest,
in the country, and we've added so much minutia to it, so many funds. I think it started out with about 10 funds, and now it has about 33. And so you end up having a document that is so filled with all kinds of rules and different ways that revenue streams have to come in and flow, and it's very thick now compared to what it started out as. And, you know, when we go around the state talking to legislative candidates, I give them a copy of the 1974 Constitution, which we revised, right, back when we had a constitutional convention back at that time. The state before then had a constitution that was half the size of War and Peace. It was literally that big. No one had any idea what was in it. And so this constitutional convention came together, a rather historic moment in our state's history, and we came up with a much slimmer and more manageable and understandable constitution. Now, there were issues in it that a lot of people would criticize. Not everyone was happy with the end product, but it was definitely a vast improvement, and it was more along the lines of what you think of as a constitution, which is a document that has the basic principles of what citizens' rights are and how the basic structure of government should be. It is not just packed with lots of special interest protections. So then what we saw over time is amendment after amendment after amendment. Let me tell you, Stephanie, they hardly ever took anything out. They just added new things in.
They just added more.
So when I talk to people coming into office, I show them that 1974 Constitution, and they flip through it. And you look at that. You could sit down and in a short time read through it. And then I show them the one we have now. thicker, you know, smaller type, you know, just really a much more difficult read. And I asked him, which of these would you rather read? You know, and then I said, which of these do you think you could understand better? And then most of all, which of these would you rather uphold?
Right.
So we want to get back to this idea of having a constitution that really is just a fundamental document, mm-hmm. and not something that gets all cluttered up and with things that you could have in statutory law.
297-5633 in the Baton Rouge area, or 1-877-217-5757 if you have a question for Robert Travis Scott. Right now we're talking about the Louisiana Constitution and the need for constitutional reform. And as you mentioned, Robert, so many amendments, so many restricted funds in there, so many protections in there. The history of those funds and those protections, didn't it stem from, you know, lawmakers' needs to get bills passed that otherwise wouldn't have passed because of a fundamental distrust that citizens have in government? And they weren't going to approve a tax for this or that unless they knew it was going to a specific dedicated purpose. I mean, isn't that the fundamental problem we have in Louisiana?
Well, it's a combination of the legislature not trusting itself from at the start, and then maybe there not being enough citizen trust in it. And then whenever the funding comes in, whatever interest wants to get their particular little piece protected, well, the last guy, you know, got his protected. Why can't I get mine protected? And so we've built up this culture that it's perfectly okay to do this. But there's also just the amazing minutia. We're going to have four amendments that are proposed for the Constitution this fall that everybody's going to be voting on. I hope they'll vote on. Of course, we'll have our usual right. par guide to the constitutional amendment to explain to you the pros and cons of each of those. I mean, one of them is I'm not opposed to what one of them wants to do, right? I'm not against this amendment, but it's an amendment that basically is a minor appropriation of money to, you know, these distinct schools. Why are we going to the polls?
Why
should
right?
this decision make? This should be a routine endeavor for the legislature to take on, you know, obviously the governor to weigh in on these types of appropriation issues that are really, in the big scope of things, fairly minor. I'm sure they're important to the schools that are getting them. But why are we putting this in the Constitution? It's because of the way we've structured it. And so what we would say is this thing has become so unwieldy, and people don't understand what's in it. And now we're sending voters to the polls to take minor appropriations decisions that legislature should take. Why don't we take this thing and turn it into a more fundamental document? Now, Stephanie, a lot of people say we ought to go to a constitutional convention. We ought to make a lot of tax reforms, a lot of big policy reforms in the middle of a constitutional convention. Look, all that's fine. What we're trying to talk about now is what is it you want to accomplish? And it seems to me there's two things. One is you could at least get a constitution that's simpler, mm-hmm. and you could take a lot of your reforms and make it the constitution flexible enough to allow those reforms to take place in phases later on. Or you could be more bold if you thought you could go through with it and actually make the reforms at the same time you're making the constitutional changes, sort of plug all of those in to the Constitution. We'd like to at least look at that former idea and
simplify,
get everybody on the same
and make
page.
It more flexible.
That's right. It's flexibility that we think is really important.
So in part one, getting the foundation right, you all basically lay out some of the things you've just been describing to me and what should a good constitution be and why it's important.
Right.
Not how to make it happen per se, but just why it matters.
Well, that's exactly right, because okay. there's been all this conversation about a constitutional convention, and there's a lot of politics involved in that. Who's going to be there? Who's going to be at the table? How's it going to be determined? Are some of the conventioners going to be elected? And that's what the conversation has really been about for the last couple of years. And we've always said, look, what is it you want to achieve? Let's talk about the goals. Let's have some consensus on what we want this thing to be. And then I think the method of how we do it will come along after that. There's a lot of ways to run a convention if you want to do that. You can take it article by article and rewrite an article in the legislature and then submit it to the voters for an up and down vote. So you could take, for example, Article 7, which is the money section of the Constitution. That's where the taxes are and the budgeting
mechanisms
are.
The most important one,
are.
Right?
Well, it's pretty darn important. I mean, it's you might say the citizens' rights sections are important too. But this is something you could take, revamp, and put it before voters, and the legislature could do this. And that's one technique for trying to go at this.
So you're saying there doesn't have to be a giant, potentially controversial constitutional convention.
And, you know, I think that the answer to that question really stems from what is it you want to do? You know, let's build some consensus on how we want to get this done. And then once you have a really good conversation going about that, then you can talk about, okay, how can we bring this about? And we're not saying a convention's a bad idea, but we're just saying let's talk about what we want to have at the end of the day, because that's what's missing from the conversation.
297-5633 or 1-877-217-5757. If you have a question for Robert Travis Scott, we'll be back with Robert right after the break. Stay right there. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal, in today for Jim Engster, and we're visiting with Robert Travis Scott, president of the Public Affairs Research Council. Robert's headed up PAR for how many years now? Seven, eight, nine?
Oh, gosh. I think this is my ninth year.
Well, congratulations. Been doing a great job working on so many important policy issues facing the state, and the big one we're talking about right now is constitutional reform. 297-5633 if you'd like to ask Robert a question about it, or 1-877-217-5757. And Robert, y'all released the first half of your report, Getting the Foundation Right, a couple of weeks ago. In September, you're going to release part two. And so as we were saying before the break, part one really talks about just why this matters and trying to get people to understand what a good constitution should be. What's going to be in part two? What should we be looking for?
That's right. You know, with part one, just trying to get the foundation right, talking about the best principles that make a good constitution, part two is a much deeper dive into what the heck is in our constitution anyway. So when you start to talk about changes, what do those changes mean? What are you really affecting? And we're going to break that down into some detail looking at it so that we can really inform this conversation. I'd really like to see an elevated discussion on what we really mean by changing the Constitution. And that's what I think we're going to be able to bring to it. You'll be able to go in and get any level of information you want about what really is happening in this Constitution. You know, one of the things we look at in this is there's a lot of dedicated funds in the Constitution. I'm about to say something pretty radical here. Okay,
so say something radical.
Well, and we had values and priorities in the 80s and 90s when we set up some of these funds and the way we were going to spend money out of them. Why can't we reevaluate those as a group and see if we have the same values and priorities today, and where those ought to go?
And those dedicated funds, though, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, they were established because people don't trust government and because government doesn't trust itself. How do you get beyond that? How do you change that mindset? How do you make people trust government?
Well, you know, some really basic mechanisms and funds in the Constitution are, you know, a good idea. We think it's good to have a budget stabilization fund, what we might call the rainy day fund. The rating agencies think, you know, it's a good idea to have one of those. So we try to lay out for you in part two which of those funds are obviously good to have in the long term and are probably okay to have in a constitution. And we also look at constitutions across the country to see what normal is. And you'll be able to see where are we normal and where are we abnormal. And we're very strangely abnormal in a lot of ways. So that's one of the things we also want to point out. Mm-hmm. And then is there some way you don't necessarily have to get rid of a lot of these funds and their mechanisms? You could put them in a statutory environment. What that would do is it eventually allow you to rethink them or to make new types of priorities surrounding them.
Okay. I think we have a caller on the line, Robert, but I can't see what his or her name is. But good morning. You're on the line with Robert Travis Scott. Are you there? Hello?
Yeah, good morning. There are It's hard not to be discouraged, though, because it seems like Louisiana will never do anything that's not in the interest of the oil and the chemical industries. I mean, it seems like Louisiana is Exxon's bitch. Sorry to...
I think you raise a very good point. What would you say to that, Robert? And I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
Well, there are lots of special interests when you talk about what's protected. Certainly, there's some industry interests. There are the local government interests. There are sheriffs and law enforcement interests. There are medical industry and nursing home interests. There's a lot of special interest in Louisiana, and they all ought to have the ability to have a voice in government and to try to promote their interest. Absolutely. And we would expect that when you talk about special interests, I would just encourage you to include the whole scope of what we're seeing. You know,
you don't think that industry, though, has maybe an even greater advantage or is an even bigger special interest group than some of the other sectors out there, because they certainly have exercised their considerable weight over the years.
Well, I would say, you know, there's a lot of things that business somehow or another doesn't seem to be able to get accomplished in the legislature that it would really like to get accomplished. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's true. I think that okay. There's a very strong interest on the part of local government entities, for example. And I'm not faulting them. I mean, I think they look after their own interests, you know, very, very well. But I think that's probably some of the strongest. And you have certain, you know, the so-called courthouse gang, if you will, you know, right. All those are connected to law enforcement and the criminal justice system. These are very powerful forces in the legislature.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller on the line, Matt?
Yep, we've got Joey calling in from the Garden District. Joey?
Good morning, Joey. Yeah, you're on with Robert.
Hey, I want to congratulate Dr. Scott with his work in PAR. I also want to get his review of the revisions of the film industry that he recommended a few years ago. How does he feel about the changes that were made, his recommendations, how they were received?
This is – well, I missed the question. What was it?
So basically, PAR had some recommendations to revise the film tax code and incentives, and I wanted to see how Dr. Scott felt about the revisions that were enacted and how he felt the impact that PAR had in making those recommendations.
Oh, great. Thanks. You're talking about the film industry.
Yes.
And that's, in fact, not in the Constitution. Just one of those things that's not in there, and it is statutory. And I'll just make this point. The fact that it's not in the Constitution allowed the legislature to come to the table and bring all the different stakeholders together and figure out what reform really should be. And that's one of the problems we have in a lot of other sectors where we're trying to make reform. You don't have that flexibility. So with the film industry tax credits, the concern there was getting so expensive to the state. There were a lot of questions about whether they're getting return on the investment. At the same time, there was a lot of filming and moving activity in the state. So it was a big controversy over mm-hmm. whether or not this program was paying the return on investment that we really want. And there was a lot of controversy over what those returns really meant, what we should be counting. At the end of the day, I do think it was important that it got limited. And I think the other thing that we hopefully have tried to cure is the accumulating debt of the credits in the program, which is something PAR didn't want to see. We didn't want to see a system set up. We just have this big ballooning set of debts in the form of credits out into the future, because that also could be a real problem. So I do think they took a stab at restraining the program, and hopefully you would hope that $180 million a year. I can't remember the exact figure, but hopefully the film industry can somehow or another scrape by.
And then they came back and tried to address some of the things they had done that perhaps had gone too far to bring some of the business back, but. Certainly, I suppose it feels good to see policy recommendations that you all make implemented and to see results from it. Another set of policy recommendations that PAR is getting behind is in connection with the RESET initiative that y'all have joined forces with C100 and also CABLE, Council for a Better Louisiana, to really try to focus on four areas, and this is sort of related to constitutional reform in a way, I suppose, four good government areas that everybody would agree need to be addressed in Louisiana, right? Well, education, state finances, criminal justice reform, public safety, and infrastructure investment.
Yeah, this is an extraordinary collaboration. And, of course, I've always known and been friends with the people involved, the Council for a Better Louisiana, or CABLE, and the Committee of 100, with Barry Irwin and Mike Olivier running those organizations. But here we've come together and said, look, let's work together in this election cycle to try to have a unified message about those things that we think are really important. And this is what we really ought to be talking about, is these issues. You may agree to one extent or another with our policy recommendations on each of these subject areas, but let's talk about these things. We know these are the things we have to talk about to move the state forward.
So how do you get beyond the talk, though, Robert? I mean, there have been so many great studies, right, that have sit on, make nice shelf art now. How do you turn this into action?
Well, look, Stephanie, you know, when reform comes, it comes in layers over a long period of time with a lot of work, and you have certain breakthrough moments that take place when the chemistry's right. And I remember, like, the LA4 program for kids, before they start regular elementary school. It used to be we didn't have that. Now we do. It took a lot of work. The criminal justice reform is another example.
All right. Well, we'll pick up when we get right back, when we get back from the break. So visiting with Robert Travis Scott, talking about constitutional reform and resetting the discussion in Louisiana. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal, sitting in for Jim Engster this morning. And we're wrapping up a visit with Robert Travis Scott from the Public Affairs Research Council. 297-5633 or 1-877-217-5757. If you have a question for Robert, he's been filling us in on PAR's efforts to push for constitutional reform and also to push for resetting the discussion around key issues facing Louisiana. And Robert, as you were saying, this Reset Louisiana Future Initiative with the Council for a Better Louisiana and C100 is focusing on education, state finances, criminal justice reform, and infrastructure investment. But, I mean, the question that I have, and I asked this of y'all when we met together a couple of weeks ago, was how do you really turn these suggestions and, from ideas that sit on a shelf to laws, to reforms, to action.
Yeah, well, first of all, let's remember, it's nice to have some things on the shelf when an election comes along, because the candidates say, oh, I'm going to go to PAR. What have they got on the shelf? that happens every 4 years. So we always want to make sure we have some things on the shelf ready for them, when that time comes. But for this particular program, Reset Louisiana's Future, you can read more about it at reset-louisiana.org. Just Google Reset Louisiana and you can bring it up. You'll see videos. You'll see explanations of what policy recommendations we're making. You can do the easy one page per policy version if you want, or you can go a little deeper with a deeper policy paper. But what we have found is that going around the state, talking to candidates for the legislature, we've gone out as a team and we've gone all over the state and had these meetings in small groups with people who are running for office, some incumbents, but mostly people who would be new to the legislature. And let me just tell you, first of all, I'm pretty enthused. You've got a lot of really intelligent people out there who are running. They really, really care about the future of the state, a lot of them, and they really want to try to figure out what the right thing is to do. And most of them have some expertise in one or another policy area, but it's overwhelming, when you're new to this subject and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, I've got to know about education, I've got to know about tax law, I've got to know about, criminal justice reform, and what about our roads, and how do we solve all this? And I have found that the by and large, the candidates have been very engaged. It's been very eye-opening for them to see the information that we're putting in front of them, just to raise their education level on a lot of these issues and focus on these things.
Well, let's just pick a hypothetical, because this is one that always gets me. I mean, let's talk about the need for infrastructure investment. And I think there's concrete steps have been made to address some of the problems, right? And Steve Carter's legislation during the last session, so many people thought this was so great. But when a group like Americans for Prosperity got behind and funded the opposition, right? I mean, nobody was going to vote for a tax. Granted, this is an election year. But how do you get those people next year to vote for that tax when they're staring at AFP and AFP is running all sorts of ads on TV and they get small businesses riled up against voting for any sort of tax? How do you combat that sort of rhetoric?
Well, look, it ought to be difficult to raise taxes, okay? I'm in favor of it being hard to raise taxes. I don't think that's something you do lightly. But I think what we do is we have a growing awareness that we need more resources for our infrastructure in the state. This is something that's really hard, you know, to deny. Now, look at how other states have handled it. When you go to Texas, you know, they have tons of toll projects, and they're able to, you know, they have a fuel tax. It really isn't that different from ours, but their toll revenue, especially on a regional basis, is just absolutely tremendous. In fact, it's not just tolls per project. You have these tolls when you drive through that will feed development throughout that whole area. When I go to Central Florida, you have an entire separate almost department of transportation running a large number of toll roads there. And that money not only goes to the individual road you're driving on, but it also goes to fund future projects and maintenance and infrastructure and so on. So you have a lot of other states that are addressing this by finding alternative means of trying to, you know, to raise money. One of the biggest challenges we have here in Louisiana, we don't have that type of traffic density to on a lot of our routes to make use of those tolls to be quite as practical as you might see in some of these other states where you have these really high volumes of traffic that can help make it work. Now, I'm not saying by any means that that's impossible. There are places we should use it. The other issue you have is a lot is this trust issue. And when we travel around the state, we find that people in the central and north Louisiana are very concerned about paying more for fuel tax and then a lot of that money going towards
South Louisiana,
the more high density, you know, traffic areas in South Louisiana. And there's a lot of concern about this. But I will say this. Our lack of infrastructure improvement has become an economic development problem.
Yeah.
And when you talk to big industry in trying to get people and products, trying to get employees to work and home, mm-hmm. trying to get the materials in and out, it is a real serious problem, and it's going to affect our ability to expand our manufacturing base and expand our societies here in Louisiana if we don't invest. And businesses, you know, are going to look at us and say, look, if you're not investing in yourself, why should we invest in you? And so we've got to find some ways to put more resources into this. And I think what you saw happen in Baton Rouge is they had the Move BR program.
Right.
People felt like, okay, I'm going to vote for this. And I hopefully have some confidence that it's really going to get spent on what it's supposed to get spent on. And I think that's where the trust factor comes in. You've got to help people believe that if they're going to put more resources in one way or another, whatever the form of revenue is going to be, that it's really going to get spent on infrastructure that's really going to be meaningful to them. That's so important to this process.
And this C100 initiative raised money to promote this agenda and to do public service announcements and a media campaign, but there won't be any money going to candidates in the fall election.
That Reset Louisiana is an education program, and it's a policy-focused program,
yeah.
if you will. We're not asking candidates to sign on and threaten them if they don't, and we're not putting any money behind any particular candidates. We're just trying to get everyone, including the gubernatorial candidates. We're meeting with all the governor candidates or their campaign staff and talking with them about this, too. And I think I feel very good about the reaction we've gotten. It's been absolutely terrific. People are very interested. They know these are the important subjects, and they're trying to find a way to do it. And, hey, we've got some really good solutions here. So pick it up, read it, and let's get this thing moving forward.
297-5633 or 1-877-217-5757 if you're outside of the Baton Rouge area. If you have a question for Robert Travis Scott, you mentioned the candidates that you've been meeting around the state as you all travel to promote this initiative. What do you see with the fall elections now that qualifying is over? There weren't any big surprises in any of the statewide offices or locals, for that matter.
Well, I guess I was a little surprised that we have so many gubernatorial candidates. I think, last time we had four, and they were all serious candidates, and this time we have, I think nine? And so there'll be some...
But three are what we would consider serious candidates.
Well, you know, there's the serious candidates, and then there's the other people who get into the race who might affect the results of the primary by, you know, a certain percentage of votes going to people, and will that change the outcome? And will that make a different outcome for the primary than we would have seen without all those people getting in? But, you know, we have a system here that allows it. You pay your money.
Right.
You meet the right qualifications. You get to run for governor. Stephanie, you could have run for governor, right? You could have gotten in there and taken it on. But I think we're seeing more women candidates this time around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it remains to be seen when all is said and done, whether we increase the number of women in the legislature after the election. That'll be one thing a lot of people will be looking at. But there's a real concerted effort for women to organize and to get in there, have their voices heard more.
And that really would change the complexion, and long term, I think, have some real significant implications for policy and legislation in the state.
And why would that be? I mean, I would love to hear.
Yeah,
you
no.
Tell me
I
why
mean,
you
I think so because think I mean, I think ultimately, regardless of what side of the aisle they're on, I think women. I think their focus is different, and I think their priorities are different. And a lot, I think they have bring a different perspective. I think to issues that I think would be. Yeah, I do.
And I do think you've seen some of that with the women who've been in the legislature in the past couple of terms, you know, speaking up more. And just the culture,
the male-oriented
culture. You know, it's just trying to get people to think a little differently. So I think that could be one change that we see. But of course, you know, the big issue is going to be who's the governor, who's the Speaker of the House, who's President of the Senate. You know, what's going to happen to the complexion? Makeup of the Senate. Will it be as moderate? And working with the governor as the one that in the past has been? These are all the big questions everyone's asking.
And the predictions at this point are that it won't be. If John Bel Edwards is reelected, and currently the polls have him ahead, he will more than likely be dealing with a very conservative legislature in both chambers, the House and the Senate, and statewide, a whole host of Republican elected officials.
Yeah, but let's remember, Stephanie, there's money out there, and this money needs to be spent. And what people in the legislature tend to figure out over time is they might position themselves as saying, well, I'm opposed to this or that, or I'm trying to show politically I'm different from, you know, my different party superior in the governor's office. At the end of the day, they all want to spend some of this money, and so in order to make that happen, quite often those who ally with the governor find out that they're better off. So, so I'm just saying. I mean, you know, we talk about these big polarization issues in the legislature, but at the end of the day, it's probably more about money. And I think the biggest differences you see money wise are not as big as people think.
Okay. Well, Robert Travis Scott, thank you so much for visiting with us today. And after the break, we'll be back with Randy Roussel, noted photographer and author.